This text by Philo of Alexandria is both an example of how a form of the word asceticism is used at the time of Christ, and also an example of allegorical exegesis, that is, the interpretation of the scriptures in a way that is purely and richly symbolic. That makes this a very difficult text to read. In fact, it comes from a book which Philo wrote on the subject of allegorical interpretation. And in it, he takes a whole variety of biblical texts, in this case, one from Genesis, or several texts from Genesis, and interprets them in a very symbolic fashion. Every word, every individual can be interpreted in its own right. We might find this very off-putting, and indeed, it can be a problem if it's not based in very good historical critical exegesis, an awareness of what the text says at its literal level. And many people are concerned about allegorical exegesis as possibly confusing or distracting people from the primary meaning of the text. And indeed, that was a criticism when this became a very popular and widespread form of interpretation in the Christian tradition. But nevertheless, it is a very beautiful means of conveying very rich spiritual insights, and that's exactly what happens in this text in regard to the use of the word ascetic and asceticism. But my saying all of this is by way of explaining that Philo's interpretation of the text may well not be what we would expect from the text on which he is commenting. If you drop down all the way to the bottom of this page, you will see that I've highlighted a number of words in both yellow and white, in the Greek and in the English. These are the terms that we're particularly going to look at and which provide the necessary background for what Philo is doing with this text. The form of the word asceticism or ascetic that is being used here is in the third paragraph, the last paragraph, the one that begins, "but nevertheless through pleasure." There you see that it's been translated here as the word experienced, eskeikatos, which actually means trained or well-trained, the person who has exercised and practiced, in this case, the art of wrestling, to the point that he is himself a very well-trained or experienced wrestler. So asceticism in this context is understood as meaning the one who is well-trained. Now, it is symbolic wrestling that Philo is concerned with here. We might call it spiritual warfare. This particular explanation has to do with, and please go back to the top of the text again, or at least to the portion that says on an allegorical interpretation, and then in blue provides an explanation of the text he's explicating. Here we find that Philo is commenting at this point on Genesis 3:15, even though he draws in the image of Jacob, which of course comes much later in Genesis. And the text he's commenting on, and this will cause us problems as well, is not the Hebrew form of the scriptures. He's using the Greek Septuagint translation, which in some cases is not a literal translation from the Hebrew, but it's what Philo was using. It's the version on which he's relying. And in his version, what is said in regard to the serpent and Eve is, "He shall watch your head, and you shall watch his heel." Now, this does not mean watchfulness in the sense of simply looking at, but taking care about, being aware of, keeping an eye on, being constantly vigilant in regard to. That's how the Septuagint translates in Greek the term which in the Hebrew is most commonly translated as bruise. We will find this in quite a number of the fathers and mothers of the tradition. They did not have access to the original Hebrew scriptures. They had to rely on the only available translation that they had, and that was almost always based on the Septuagint, on the Greek translation of the Hebrew Bible, which was done several centuries before the birth of Christ. Well, that's the text that he's going to be explicating, but the immediate background to it is the idea of spiritual warfare. He's interpreting this watching of the heel, both by the serpent and the one who is warned about the serpent, to be applied to the soul, to each individual soul. And so he's primarily concerned, if you drop down again to the third paragraph, with what I've highlighted in white, and that is the idea of passion or the passions. we will encounter this word quite regularly in the Christian, early Christian and monastic literature. It does not mean passion in the sense of desire for what is beautiful. It does not primarily refer to erotic or sexual desire. In its strict form, the word passion simply means anything that sweeps you up and takes away your freedom. Passion is a whirlwind which suddenly renders you incapable of choosing and forces you to become passive. A passion is something that makes you passive. And so we'll see that in the literature with which we will be concerned very regularly in this course, you can have all kinds of passions. Anger can be a passion. The desire for food can be a passion. Pride can be a passion. Anything that so completely takes you over, that takes, as it were, possession of you, that you are no longer free, is a passion. This is how it was understood in the Platonic and then later in the Neoplatonic traditions, which so influenced Christianity, and this is how Philo understands it. This is the background for his understanding and use of this word. Now, if we move to the top, what he says in the first paragraph is, the words shall watch, shall keep, shall preserve, all of these things, he says, has to do with the interrelationship between the mind, the nous, which is the deepest level of the human self, and the possibility that the mind can be overwhelmed by a desire for pleasure, for hedone. And when that happens, freedom disappears and struggle is necessary. Struggle is necessary in order for the person to continue pursuing the goals that God has placed before them. So in this context, asceticism will have overtones of struggling against something, struggling against pleasure. And he uses language like the destructive quality, the purpose of destroying, which a mind wholly given over to pleasure will experience. But his primary concern is to make us aware of the fact that we can also be, we can emulate, we even have within us a kind of Jacob function. We can be trained athletes who are able to wrestle with this tendency to be taken over by the quest for pleasure. We can struggle against them, and in doing that, we will not only not be tripped up, we will not fall, but in a certain sense, we will overcome, we will have victory over passions. That's the whole point of this text, and feel free to reread it and to look at it on your own. Notice again that he will interpret almost every word and every term in a richly symbolic way that may be only remotely connected with the original, with the literal sense of the word. But my goal in presenting this text to us was to remind us that at the time of Christ, a man whose writings powerfully influence Christian theologians is using the word ascetic in the sense of one who is trained. He's using it in the philosophical sense, one who is well trained in the virtues and who has the ability to withstand this overwhelming possibility of being seized by desires or a quest for pleasure that will take you out of freedom and render you less capable of being what God has made you capable of being. So this is the understanding of this word at the time of Christ, and it will powerfully influence the later tradition. Notice that it does not mean simply a masochistic rejection of things that are good or pleasant. It is the rejection of being swept up and rendered unfree. We'll come back to this point in other texts as well.